Fantasy Focus Football is presented by Geico. Switch to Geico today and see all the ways you could save.
Fantasy, you're in the home 6010. Focus. Fantasy. Fantasy Focus.
Hey, welcome in to our day two and day three recap of the NFL Draft. It is the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. Field Yates, Stefania Bell, and a connecting to audio Matthew Berry has arrived to the party as well. It is Monday, May 2nd. We've had a couple of days to chew on most of the moves from days two and three. We already had the day one podcast drop. If you haven't yet listened to it, go ahead and give that a download and a listen if you are so inclined. But I'll start by asking pleasantries. Stefania, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Phil. Good.
And you are somewhere in the world. You are in parts unknown. You're in a hotel room somewhere because you are the most well-traveled individual at ESPN during the NFL offseason. You are going to conferences. You are spending time with family. You are doing the research and the legwork for the season ahead while Matthew and I mostly hang around the Northeast and just watch the newest season of Selling Sunset on Netflix.
Oh, you guys are being dads. You know, that's awesome. That's what the summer is for, is being dads. That's and I'm taking enough. Care of my dad. So all about dads.
Okay, all about dads these days, and I've got my fur baby right next to me, Cisco, who loves to be a part of the Fantasy Focus podcast, right, buddy? He's got strong takes on the draft. Those are coming up in a bit. I'm filibustering a moment because I can see Matthew fiddling around with his mic, so I'm hoping that if I keep talking in circles for like another 30 seconds, his mic will be set up.
Yeah, sooner or later. Phil, by the way, I want to say this. You did an awesome job doing the draft for the digital show that you did with Mina and everybody and Dominique. It was awesome.
Oh, well, that's so nice of you to say. That's a really fun show if you haven't had the chance to check it out. I think this is our sixth draft doing it. And listen, they do an amazing job on the primary broadcast. And if you want someone to be a hype man for Mel Kiper Jr. and Todd McShay, I am that person. Yeah. I love those two with my whole heart.
Did you see the nod that Mel and
I did.
Todd gave you?
Very nice of them.
The show? Yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. They are the best. And Mel and Todd and I always talk about this is day three when we're talking about like, you know, Midwestern state third string linebacker. And then Mel is discussing his height, weight, speed, three cone, 40 time. His brother's high school track background. I'm thinking to myself, I don't care what you listen. Everybody's going to have their hits and misses in the draft. Mel and Todd, their dedication to the craft is unmatched. All right. So we're still working on Matthew's mic. We're going to get right into it. Hopefully, Matthew will figure it out in the next couple of minutes here. But Stefania, I think it's very clear that when we get to days two and three, this is something, and I mentioned this on the new Gojo show. Congrats to our friend Michael Jr. On his new show at DraftKings, is that it's a the phrase that I use, it's a fool's errand to assume consensus in the NFL draft. All right, there's very few things, especially after like the first, I think in this year, maybe like 8 to 10 picks that a lot of NFL teams agree upon. But there are plenty of examples in recent years, including last year, of players on day two and even day three becoming fantasy stars right away, running backs more frequently than wide receivers or tight ends. We're going to get right into it. And the Packers did not use a first round pick on a wide receiver. What was your reaction to them not doing so, but only waiting two picks into night two to finally grabbing a wide receiver and finding North Dakota State's Christian Watson?
I figured, you know, I thought maybe they were just trying to torment us or maybe their quarterback, you know, just because everybody's watching for exactly that. But, you know, once we got under day two, it was pretty clear they have no choice. Like they lost Davante Adams. There's no Marquez Valdez-Scantling anymore. I mean, who's going to catch passes? Their tight end is coming off an ACL tear. They are thin in the pass catching position. So it didn't leave a lot to the imagination that that's where they needed to go. The question is, did they get the right guy?
I tend to think so. For those that don't know a lot about Christian Watson with North Dakota State, same place as Trey Lance. What Christian Watson was really well known for is his speed. One of the fastest receivers in the draft. When a player comes from North Dakota State, no matter how long he played there, no matter how productive he was, the variable is what he'll look like at the next level when he's playing against stiffer competition. But he is more, like, I think,
you know,
he's much more.
I thought you were going to say, you know, he's played in the cold. So yes, therefore, he can handle Green Bay.
Oh, he's going to think Green Bay is balmy. He's going to be like, wow, Green Bay, this is like, you know, summer. But anyways, we're going to get to Matthew in just 1 second. Like, Christian Watson has plenty of speed. So to me, he's much more like Marquez Valdes-Scantling. And while he just got paid nicely in Kansas City, I think Green Bay is hoping for a much more consistent effort from Christian Watson. And as Stefania alluded to, Matthew, there is plenty of opportunity in Green Bay right now.
Obviously. So, you know, not only did Devontae Adams get traded to the Raiders, but you have Marquez Valdes-Scantling. He's now a member of the Chiefs. You know, so that's, you know, two of their top guys that are gone. You have, there may not be a clearer path for a rookie wide receiver to have fantasy value than Christian Watson, given both the massive opportunity, the amount of targets that are available with MVS and Adams both leaving, and obviously the upside of that offense, quarterbacked by Aaron Rodgers. Having said all that, he's a rookie, and there's never been a rookie wide receiver in the Aaron Rodgers era to average over 7 fantasy points per game.
What?
The best was actually MVS, his rookie year, right? I mean, and Jordy Nelson averaged under 6 fantasy points his rookie year. Now, obviously, Christian Watson comes into a situation that's very different than either of those guys ever came in, because when Adams came in, you had a Jordy Nelson, right? You had guys that were elite. When I'm trying to think of like who was there when Jordy Nelson came in, right? I mean, was it James Jones? He's never had a rookie like this that he's had to lean on as much as I think he's going to have to lean on Christian Watson. I also feel, and this is you should put on your NFL insider hat here, I have to feel like the Packers aren't done. Jarvis Landry is still out there, right? Odell Beckham Jr. hasn't signed with a team yet. And obviously we wait to see, you know, when he could actually play after suffering the ACL tear in the Super Bowl. But I don't know. I understand the Packers love to put a lot on Aaron Rodgers' shoulders, and he is going to make $150 million or whatever it is over the next couple of years. So I don't know what their salary cap situation is. But it does, Donald Driver, thank you very much, as it gets texted to me. Yes, I couldn't remember Donald Driver, the great Donald Driver. Like, I just feel like that's a lot to go into the season with Alan Lazard and Christian Watson. You know, and I guess, you know, we'll see if Bob Tonyan comes back. Cobb there.
Yep.
Bob Tonyan is back. Okay. So obviously he suffered an injury and we expect him hopefully back by the start of the season. But yeah, I mean, I think just on potential role alone, Watson is much more of a fantasy consideration today than he was 4 days ago before he'd been drafted.
Yeah, I could see them adding another wide receiver in free agency. I don't know. I certainly could see Jarvis Landry. I think the question would be with Randall Cobb and Amari Rodgers already on the roster, is it too sort of similar of a skill set playing primarily from the slot? But when you've got Aaron Rodgers and you've got a chance to be really good, you've won 39 games over the past 3 years, like, you'll consider anything. So for now, Christian Watson lined up for a pretty reasonable role, but Matthew expressed some of the fair concerns for just any rookie wide receiver in this offense. Let's move forward here, because I think
we'll have just real quickly, because we got a lot of names to whip through here. Yeah. We'll have all offseason to sort of rank these guys.
Yep.
But I would argue Christian, like, I think I still prefer Drake London. You know, I still prefer some of the guys that we've talked about, you know, the day one guys. But Christian Watson is in the upper tier of rookie wide receivers. Christian Watson should be drafted this year.
I think there's two things. I think Aaron Rodgers picks who he's going to throw. He identifies who he likes. So I think there's a lot to watch after you get through the spring and into the summer, because we know that Aaron Rodgers calls up guys essentially from practice squad and guys who have not been major targets, and he'll say, this is who I want to get more involved in the game. So I think we'll learn based on what Aaron Rodgers says and does in the early part of camp. The other thing is the volume of catches between Devontae Adams basically catching, you know, being targeted on a third of his routes and MVS together. they have to catch the ball. And to Robert Tonyan coming back, yes, he's on track to come back, but there's no guarantee he starts the season on time. He's still got a long ways to go.
All right, let's keep things moving forward here. And this one's a little bit easier only because he plays running back and he's perhaps the best running back in the draft. That was Breece Hall out of Iowa State, who goes 36th overall to the Jets. And a note here, by the way, I probably should have mentioned this off the very top, is that we're going to try to get through as many of the players that currently are included in Mike Clay's projections. And some rookies, just based off of situation, don't quite have as clear of a path to a fantasy-relevant role right away. Those include Trey McBride, the second-round tight end to the Arizona Cardinals, Tyquan Thornton to the Patriots, the 50th overall pick, the absolute speed demon from Baylor. So if we don't get to them now, we'll get to them eventually. Just for now, it seems like perhaps they might be guys who have to compete for snaps and maybe are more part of the team's future in 2023 and beyond. Reminder, the draft is not just about this year. It's about filling needs for the future. But Breece Hall from the Jets should be very busy right away. Matthew, I'll start with you. I think on paper, we said to ourselves, if Breece Hall got the chance to go somewhere and be the feature back, there's a chance that he could be the most fantasy relevant rookie this season. Did he land in the right opportunity for that to happen?
No. I mean, look, here's the problem. Breece Hall, the running back you're going to want to draft from the Jets this year is okay. Breece Hall, right? That's clear. And wherever Breece Hall was going to go, because there was going to be a lot of draft capital and he goes towards the top of the second round, there's going to be, opportunity there. The problem here, there's threefold. It's one of the least ideal landing spots for Breece Hall, I would argue, because there's three issues. Number one is they're not very good. We expect them to be better. You and I both liked what the Jets did from a draft perspective this year. Last year, Joe Douglas had them heading in the right direction, but it is a team that is rebuilding. It is a team that is going to be very young, and it's a team that still has a offensive line that's in flux. Hopefully it improves this year. We expect it to be better this year, but it's still not going to be a great offensive line. We don't expect it to be a great offense, i.e. they're not in scoring position. There's not going to be a ton of like sort of bunny touchdowns, if you will, cheap ones for Breece Hall. And Michael Carter's there. Do I think Michael Carter has a significant enough role to limit Breece Hall? I don't, but I think he's going to be enough there. He's going to be there enough. Remember, this is a former 49ers coaching staff in New York, also on the offensive side. An offense that they all come out of the Kyle Shanahan tree, which is an offense that uses multiple running backs. And we saw that last year. Towards the end of the year, Michael Carter sort of established himself as the guy you wanted, but still they mixed in multiple guys. And I don't think Michael Carter suddenly goes away. I think the drafting of Breece Hall absolutely kills Michael Carter's fantasy value. He's still like now maybe he's a flex-ish type running back in PPR only leagues for Michael Carter maybe, but I expect Breece Hall to be somewhat involved in the passing game here. And anyway, I think he's on the right side of a running back by committee, but Michael Carter's going to get enough work to be annoying for Breece Hall. So you can't count on the volume. And I don't think the offensive line is going to be good enough where he's just a true elite running back. Breece Hall, much more to be a lower end RB2, higher end flex, at least for this year in season long.
That's fair. Yeah. I could see a pathway to him being a little bit better than what you're describing right now, sure, or an RB2 or mid-tier flex. But you're right. I think the Jets made it very clear. And this is emblematic of where the league is going. And we'll talk about this throughout the show when teams are making these draft day investments, is that I think Derrick Henry, by the way, may not even be this kind of player anymore going forward, is going to become more and more of a unicorn. Teams are just not interested in having one running back carry the ball 325 or 340 times a year and also handle the ball 80 times in the passing game. Running back by committee is going to become the norm in the NFL if it hasn't been that already. I think this Breece Hall pick, I do think he'll lead the Jets in touches. I do think he'll be the best running back in fantasy, but it's not like Michael Carter did not meet expectations last year as a fourth round rookie. He was really solid. He's obviously excellent in the passing game as well. Wouldn't surprise me.
For about 4 weeks.
Yep.
You know, so yeah, Matthew, totally. When you're talking about the back half of the season, when they were rotating guys, they were also dealing with like who was going to be on the field.
Sure. So I think that Breece Hall lands in it. I understand why the Jets did it. I agree with the assessment that, like, as an example, if he had gone to Buffalo, right, I think we all would have said to ourselves, wow, like, not only could he be the leading back in Buffalo, but he could, because they're so good offensively, just fall into the end zone 12 times next year, even if he didn't perform at an efficient level. That was not the case, but still a valuable piece just a matter of how a couple things shake out, as Matthew referenced, including the offensive line. We're going to come back and talk about another second round running back in just a moment. But first, Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Well, of course you would. After all, who doesn't love a great deal, right? And when it comes to great rates on insurance for all the things in your life, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. They can even help with homeowners, condos, or renters coverage. You could save even more with a special discount when you bundle your coverages, plus add the easy-to-use Geico mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. And choosing to switch to Geico becomes an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent and get started seeing how much you could save. All right, so in the second round, we also saw Kenneth Walker III from Michigan State, who spent the first 2 years of his college career at Wake Forest, go to the Seahawks, 41st overall. And this one drew a lot of ire, a lot of criticism. I actually understood it, I think, maybe more than most. And I tend to try to be the person that doesn't question draft picks, but rather tries to find the logic in them. After all, these teams are literally pouring 365 days a year worth of resources into the draft. They're not making these decisions flippantly or half-heartedly. But Seattle gets Kenneth Walker. And Matthew, I think right out of the gates, his value may not be what it could be a year from right now.
1,000%. Stefania and I were at an ESPN party, shaking hands, kissing babies. Right. I was mostly just holding phone people to take pictures with star Fania. That's what happens at these events. People come up to the two of us and they hand the phone to me and they say, hey, can you take a picture with me and star Fania? So that's what we were doing. But you were on air, I know, with Mina Kimes, who is a noted diehard Seahawks fan. I'm curious what her reaction to this selection is. I agree with your assessment. I think the thought process here, I think a lot of people expected them to take a quarterback given their situation, the trade of Russell Wilson. My belief is that they evaluated the quarterback class here and they thought, you know what? We don't think anyone's any good. We don't think anyone's had a massive improvement over what we have. And we're obviously going to be rebuilding and, you know, we'll save our bullets for next year when the quarterback class is expected to be stronger. In the meantime, we know Pete Carroll loves to run the ball and establish the run. And you have to think that, so they brought back Rashad Penny on a one-year deal. Rashad Penny, prior to the end of last year, has dealt with injuries throughout his career, one of Stefania's most talked about players. And then Chris Carson, who obviously his season ended early with a neck injury. To me, this selection says a lot more about the concerns about the durability and the health of Chris Carson and Rashad Penny, Stefania.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Carson, it's really sad. So in March, everybody probably remembers he had the neck injury last year. He underwent surgery, a cervical fusion. Basically, they fuse two vertebrae together. It's not that he can't come back, but the odds of it are, you know, not necessarily in his favor. Now, in March, Pete Carroll said Chris Carson was rehabbing, doing well, and said he looked forward to returning. But there was also a lot of uncertainty about whether he would. He has 1 year left on his contract before it voids in 2023. Field, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Seattle can cut him after the 1st of June if he's not able to return to form. And so they have a little time here to make that decision, but I think it's very uncertain whether he's able to come back. And Matthew, you referenced Rashad Penny. He had injuries the first 3 years of his career. He played 14 games in 2018, 10 in 2019. That's when he tore his ACL. Three games in 2020. And in 2021, he missed weeks 2 through 6 with a calf injury. So he really only came alive in the second half, and come alive he did. But he had a hamstring injury in week 12. So I think they know they cannot rely on Rashad Penny as a sole back in that system. Not that they are a sole back system anyway, but there's a lot of uncertainty around Chris Carson.
Yeah, I think that was well said, Stefania. You're right. You know, financially, the Seahawks do have a pathway out of the Chris Carson deal. Wouldn't stun me if he is not with the Seahawks by the start of training camp or this season. And while they do have players besides Chris Carson and Rashad Penny at running back, like, they don't have a bell cow. And both of those players could easily be free agents after, or could one of them, as I just said, like Chris Carson might not be with the team this year, and Penn is going to be a free agent after this upcoming year. Like Kenneth Walker a year from right now might wind up being the lead back in a Seahawks offense, and who knows where they will be. Obviously, this team is going to deal with the reverberations of not having Russell Wilson, but if you're in a dynasty league and you're really well equipped and you had a strong year last year and you're picking towards the back end of your first round, Kenneth Walker might be sitting there because I'm not sure how much he'll help you this year. He could help you a lot, but he might not help you at all. He might not help you at all. Like this could be a guy that turns into like a really valuable commodity as soon as 2023. So I had my eyes on him, especially for those that play in dynasty leagues. Let's move forward to the next couple of picks.
I think you could make an argument that Walker is the number one pick at running back in a dynasty league this year.
He's not a pass catcher though. Am I right?
Not a major pass catcher, but so I think this year we didn't really have like Breece Hall is a very adept pass catcher. But besides that, we didn't have like, it wasn't a great running back class. Obviously there's a reason why none went the first round, but we didn't have a running back. Like probably the best pass catching running back in the class was maybe
James Cook.
Maybe
James,
James Cook, but you could probably have some reasonable arguments about that. But I think that's fair, Stefania. I just, to be honest with you, like, and I don't want to poo-poo the podcast we're doing right now, but like, it's not a great year for rookies in general. Like,
but it's true. Relative to some of the classes we've gotten so excited about, you're searching for like the upside that could continue to develop as opposed to saying, here's a lot of stars that we have out of the gate.
Yeah. So what Matthew said earlier about you can make the case for him, meaning Kenneth Walker being the number one running back this year in dynasty, is reasonable enough. So let's move forward here to the next couple of picks.
Before you get to Wandell Robinson, I just want to point something out that I agree with you. There's not nearly as sexy names as there has been in previous years. Obviously it's a really underwhelming quarterback class for fantasy, and same with running back. It's a deep class at wide receiver, but I also want to just caution people against sort of just like, okay, you know, ignoring it and poo-pooing it, because again, you never know until they get to the NFL. Like no one was at this time when Cooper Kupp came out, no one was like, oh my God, Cooper Kupp. I believe Cooper Kupp's rookie year, and Field, you're better at this than I am, but I believe Cooper Kupp's rookie year was the year that Big Mike Williams and John Ross and Corey Davis all went in the top 10 among rookies. I think that was Cooper Kupp's rookie year. And like those were the...
I believe Cooper Kupp. Yeah, that sounds right. 2017. Yeah, that sounds right to me. Yeah, about right. Cooper Kupp was just much older than those guys, I believe, coming into the draft. I could be wrong there too.
But whether that's right or wrong, I feel like it was Cooper Kupp. And I feel like, you know, it was like, I also think that was Juju Smith-Schuster's rookie year. Remember, he had a great rookie year. My point is that like at the time that Cooper Kupp was drafted, no one ever thought, oh, that guy's eventually going to be the number one wide receiver in fantasy. Like he was an afterthought. And so, I mean, and like people liked Justin Jefferson coming out of college, but no one thought Justin Jefferson would be Justin Jefferson in all capital letters the way he is now.
We all know there was this guy drafted in the sixth round as a quarterback that nobody paid attention to.
Sure, but
there's plenty of undrafted rookies who went undrafted too, who come, James Robinson. Like, but I think what we're saying is that there aren't people who jump off the page right now where we can say clearly these are guys who have we think are automatically destined for success.
Yeah. And just quickly, because we have to move on here, is that like, you're right, Matthew, there are plenty of examples of players that became stars that were sort of unexpected stars, but like from a process standpoint, like the value of a top five rookie dynasty pick this year feels very dissimilar to last year when, you know, if you're playing a super flex league, you could land yourself a Trevor Lawrence or a quarterback from that class last year, or one of those outstanding, you know, a Ja'Marr Chase, right? Like we'll see whether any of these guys reach that level. But from a process standpoint, like, you know, if the fifth pick in your draft this year might not be nearly the same level of player as it was last year. Let's keep moving forward, though, because we got a handful of names to get through as well. Okay. Next up is Wandale Robinson, really fun player from Kentucky. He goes 43rd overall to the Giants. Matthew, the Giants on paper have a lot of investments at wide receivers. Kenny Golladay is still making a ton of money. Sterling Shepard is back on a restructured contract. Obviously, Kadarius Toney for now remains on their roster. Darius Slayton remains on their roster. What do you make of this one here? Because it's a new regime. Could that mean that the Wandale Robinson value is much greater than somebody who could also be the fifth receiver on his own team?
Yes. I mean, I think this is one that, like, can we talk about Wandale Robinson in August? Because to your point, right? I mean, the Giants are a team in flux. They really are. They are so up against it, against the cap. I would think they would love, absolutely love to get out from Kenny Galladay's contract. And whether they're able to or not, we'll see. But, you know, I think there's a chance, and whether it's a 3% chance or a 50% chance, I think there's a chance they manage to do that. But certainly there's been rumors that Kadarius Toney could be on the move. They've both Darius Slayton and Sterling Shepard have struggled with injuries. So I just sort of feel like, correct. This is the first pick of a new regime. Brian Daboll, we expect to be creative as an offensive play caller. And so given the versatility of Robinson, could be interesting. Again, we saw somewhat with Kadarius Toney last year, but I don't think as it stands right now, I can't imagine drafting Wandale Robinson in a season-long redraft league as, you know, again, the fifth option on what we expect to be a not a good offense.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Unless Stefania has anything to add, I think we should just move forward because I like the player a lot and we'll see. I just, if Kadarius Toney gets traded and maybe Sterling Shepard's not ready to begin the year and things like that, I could see it differently. But for right now, feels like probably a more distant thought than it is a pertinent thought.
Yeah, I think all three of those receivers have big injury question marks and other things when it comes to Toney. But I think the assumption that Sterling Shepard will be is, again, there's ready and there's return to performance, something I keep talking about. I'm not sure where he'll be at the start of camp.
Let's move forward here to John Metchie III, drafted just one slot later out of Alabama. Well, and Stephon, obviously all the discussion in the pre-draft process about Jameson Williams coming out off of an ACL tear. John Metchie tore his ACL about a month in advance of Jameson Williams. Both tore their ACLs against Georgia, just the SEC championship and then the national championship. So from a health standpoint, he's got another month ahead of him. Do we think there's a chance that John Metchie will be on the field when the season begins?
There's a chance, but here's what I'll say. I think he landed at a fantastic spot. So the Texans, their team physician is one of the most noted ACL surgeons in the country. So if a player coming off an ACL reconstruction goes to the Texans, I always feel like they're going to be well monitored. Number one, it means they have a lot of confidence in the stability of his knee coming into the organization. Number two, it means that they feel like he can, you know, he can get back to not only his previous level of performance, but exceed it, right? Because when you're going from college to the NFL, that's what you need to do. And I know that they really liked him when he came for his visit. They thought he was a great fit. I think he was a guy that the Texans wanted. So I was not surprised at all that he went here. They will not push him to be back the first week of the season. This is a longer term investment, kind of like we talked about with Jameson Williams. And you hope that the Lions are careful with Williams and not push him back just because it would be exciting to have him on the field. I think the Texans will do the right thing. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't start till like October. But I think by October, you probably see him.
Okay. So Matthew may have to wait to see him a little bit here. How about the landing spot? There's a lot of opportunity for John Metchie III because Brandon Cooks is sort of locked in as the number one in Houston. Nico Collins showed some things last year, but in terms of like young players on the roster, wouldn't surprise me if John Metchie carves a role once he's healthy. We may have lost Matthew. Matthew's on mute, so he's talking to himself.
He hasn't done this much before. Fields.
Yeah, I know.
No, it's so sorry. Yes, I was. I'm at my house where there's construction going on, so I'm trying to mute myself when anyway. Anyway, yeah. So what I said is that certainly there is opportunity there in Houston. We don't expect their defense to be particularly good. They had to throw a decent amount last year. I expect them to continue to do that as well. And certainly outside of Brandon Cooks, there's no one that has a truly established role as sort of the number two guy there. So given the pedigree of the player, definitely a name to keep on radars and, you know, maybe a late flyer.
And the big question is just like, while we liked the promise shown by Davis Mills last year, it wasn't exactly an offense that was lighting the world on fire, even though I am optimistic. Like I am the card carrying member of like the Texans are doing good things in general. It just may take a couple of years. The AFC is loaded and they can afford to be patient because frankly, they aren't going to be at the top of their division. Let's move forward here. And
by the way, it's a new coaching staff too. Keep in mind that it also, you know, it's a new coaching staff in Houston as well. You know, they had a lot of turnover after the 1 year.
Yep. Pep Hamilton takes over as the OC. He was there last year. So there is some familiarity and Lovie Smith was there last year as well, but there are a couple of tweaks and maybe some refinements based off things that they prefer to do versus the previous head coach in David Culley and the previous offensive coordinator in Tim Kelly as well. The Steelers rolled the dice on George Pickens, 52nd overall. And, you know, the Steelers drafts anybody at wide receiver and you kind of have your antenna up. George Pickens, another guy, Stefania, who came off of an ACL last year, but he returned to the field. He came back for the final four games of Georgia's seasons, which suggests that the injury is largely behind him.
Right. And again, same two things that I was talking about with Mechie. They saw that his knee was stable at the combine. That's always one thing they want to look at, you know, is the knee. Sometimes these grafts can stretch out a little bit. Do they feel like the knee's unstable? A lot of guys wouldn't be selected if they thought there was some risk in that way. So his knee was stable and that return to play at the prior level is really important for Pittsburgh. So they saw that and very comfortable with him going forward.
The questions for George Pickens, Matthew, were not necessarily about ability. He's 6'3", almost 200 pounds, can really run, maturity, off-field behavior. I mean, he missed multiple games in college due to team punishment, but very talented guy. And the Steelers needed a third wide receiver with Juju Smith-Schuster now in Kansas City. And by the way, not suggesting he's gone, but Deontay Johnson in a contract year right now. Chase Claypool, I mean, unbelievable for that mini stretch as a rookie, but inconsistent last year. This could be a pretty reasonable role for George Pickens.
I thought this was an amazing landing spot. You know, we've talked about sort of how disappointing fantasy-wise it was for guys like Breece Hall or Kenneth Walker to land where they did. I thought this was an amazing landing spot for George Pickens for a variety of reasons. One, for what you just mentioned in terms of opportunity. We'll see if Deontay Johnson is there long-term. Honestly, we'll see if Chase Claypool is there long term. There's been some maturity issues, it feels like, with Claypool in Pittsburgh as well. But either way, to your point about the maturity issues with Pickens and some of the off the field issues with him, if ever there was a team to go to, if you have those things, it's Pittsburgh and Mike Tomlin, right? I mean, so it's a, you know, it's a small market town in terms of the media. And again, you think about the crazy that you've seen from Antonio Brown. And then you think about Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh, and you never saw any of that. Like, if ever there was an organization where, you know, things are buttoned up from the top down, I think it's the Pittsburgh Steelers and what Mike Tomlin has there. So I think they'll get Pickens on the straight and narrow, as it were, and the skill and talent of the player is not in question. So going to a place where there's a clear path to some playing time initially, and then potentially a lot more, you know, in a year or two, and the atmosphere around him, that's great. The other thing is that in terms of just for redraft, I think Pickens is, you know, can be fairly ignored just because A, we don't know about the role, the health we talked about a little bit, but more than that, the quarterback is a question mark, right? It's going to be Mitch Trubisky likely to start, but they also selected Kenny Pickett, who we talked about on the last podcast after the first round. We expect this to be an even more run-heavy team than it was last year, given their quarterback situation.
All right, let's move forward to a couple more here that I think have a chance to be fantasy relevant right away. And Alec Pierce, 53rd overall from Cincinnati, unbelievable athlete, ran like the wind, had a 40.5-inch vertical leap at the combine, had his best year in college by far as a senior in Cincinnati when they made their incredible run to the college football playoff. And as things presently stand, Matthew, he could be the wide receiver too in Indianapolis.
There's not much else after Michael Pittman. And, you know, they traded for Matt Ryan in the offseason, which gives them again, I say this phrase all the time, but it's no insult intended. Matt Ryan's a professional quarterback. Matt Ryan can get the ball where he needs to go. And while I think Matt Ryan's best days are behind him, and certainly he's not the factor he used to be fantasy-wise, he's still a really good NFL quarterback. We expect him to be run heavy, but still, to your point, you know, think about whether it's, you know, Paris Campbell or Zach Pascal or, you know, some of these other guys, you know, there is yet to be somebody that has stepped up beyond Michael Pittman there in Indianapolis. So absolutely love the pick, love the landing spot for Alex Pierce. To your mention, 6'3", 211. He's somebody that can really stretch the field. And Matt Ryan has supported multiple fantasy-relevant wide receivers over his career, including you go back to 2020 when he had three different wide receivers that had over 700 yards. So, yes, I think Alec Pierce is somebody that moves up the rookie ranks, even though he went later than a lot of them. He went 53rd overall. I think he'll be drafted much higher in fantasy than where he went in the NFL draft among wide receivers.
I wouldn't be surprised if this next player is perhaps the most discussed, at least amongst one of the most discussed guys that wasn't taken in the first like 20 or so picks. That's Sky Moore, Matthew, going to the Chiefs at 54th overall. Mel Kiper Jr. called him the most underrated player in the NFL draft. Played at Western Michigan, really productive last year with nearly 1,300 receiving yards. Obviously no Tyreek Hill in Kansas City. He did add Marquez Valdez-Scantling and Juju Smith-Schuster. He has some slot ability, which is where Juju operates mostly. What do you think here? Are you buying the idea that he could have an immediate role?
I am. I'm going to tell you that, Scott, I'm going to say it right now. For you and I, for what we do for a living, Field Yates, Sky Moore is going to be one of the hardest players to rank this year.
Yeah, I agree.
Because there is such a wide range of outcomes for him. For some of these guys that we've talked about, you know, you sort of know, like, there's going to have to be an injury, or there's going to have to be something for them to be fantasy relevant. Or in the case of, you know, a guy like Drake London, who immediately slots in at white, you're like, okay, he's going to get his opportunities. Sky Moore could be an absolute fantasy superstar. Tons of talent, as we talked about here. Great there. We know Mel likes him. A lot of people really like him as well. And he's going to an offense coached by Andy Reid, quarterback by Patrick Mahomes. Just being on the field, having a heartbeat and being on the field, you know, with Mahomes under center suddenly makes you fantasy relevant. Having said that, to your point, they still have Travis Kelce. They still have, you know, they have Juju Smith-Schuster. They have Marquez Valdez-Scantling. They have Mecole Hardman. And I think I was just about to mention Mecole Hardman, because not only do they have him there, but think about the hype that Mecole Hardman got when he was drafted. Completely. Now, part of that was because there was concerns about Tyreek Hill and that there might be a suspension there with Tyreek Hill. It went at the time that he was drafted. That ended up not happening. But still, the fact of the matter is that think about Clyde Edwards-Helaire and how many backflips we were all, and I include myself in this, doing in the fantasy community about Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who had a clear path to playing time as a rookie for Andy Reid. And was a disappointment. He absolutely was a disappointment fantasy-wise his rookie year. So Sky Moore, to me, could just be, you know, the fourth or fifth option on this passing offense, or it could be like number two. Like, there's just such a wide range of outcomes here for Sky Moore. He is fast. He's, again, if you mentioned, I think they consider him more as a slot guy. Juju has played both inside and outside in his career. So could you see a scenario where you've got MBS and Juju on the outside and Sky Moore in the slot? Certainly. You know, I think the expectation here is that Juju's going to play the slot, but we don't know. Yeah. Juju started his career on the outside. It's weird. It was so weird what Pittsburgh did with Juju over the last 2 years, turning him into basically like, you know, they turned him into like Julian Edelman. Like, yeah. I mean, not even Julian Edelman. I mean, they turned him into like a poor man's Edelman. Cole Beasley. That's a great call. Yeah, I mean, like, so Juju has that field stretching ability. So I just don't know, man.
I think the issue with Kansas City.
Go ahead.
I think the issue with like getting super optimistic about Sky Moore is that like ultimately you have to depress your expectations for somebody else then, right? Like, it comes at the cost of somebody. We can't have 9 Kansas City offensive players that were like, this guy's going to be a top, you know, 15 to this position, or in the case of Mahomes and Kelce, like a top, you know, 2, right? I mean, or top 1 even. So I like the player. I'll be interested to see how things carve out or how things shake out. But sometimes the most obvious guys are the ones that end up being like some of our bigger whiffs in fantasy. So I'm excited. I'm optimistic. I'm trying to contain my optimism, not my excitement, just a little bit. I don't want to go overboard with Sky Moore before I've actually seen how things shake out there in KC. Let's get a couple more in here.
Real quick, I just one last thought here, and then we can whip through some of these next ones coming up, I think, quickly here. But I do think just in terms of as you think about draft strategy coming in, I do think you want to take a dart throw on that Kansas City offense. And whether it is MVS or Juju Smith-Schuster or Sky Moore, like, or Mecole Hardman, like, one of those guys is going to be awesome this year. One of those guys is going to emerge as, like, as Mahomes is number one. And maybe we get some indications of that in August and we get into some preseason games and, you know, we start seeing reports. Number of people do a really great job covering the Chiefs, including Adam Teicher, who does a great job for us. So hopefully get some information between now and draft season. But I just think if you're doing a best ball draft now, or you're doing, you know, we, Scott Fishbowl is coming up here in a month and a half. I do think you want to take a shot on the Chiefs offense on one of those guys, hoping that it pans out, that turns out to be the guy. Because I don't think any of them are going to have high ADP. None of them are going to come at. Yeah. So anyway,
have some shares of the Chiefs. Let's do. Let's just start ripping through these next few here. James Cook for the Bills, talked about earlier, Matthew. You like his pass catching ability. I think we all do. It seems like he's got a chance to be sort of J.D. McKissick-esque. Obviously, McKissick was briefly, well, not technically a Bill, but had agreed to terms with them and then returned back to your Washington Commanders. Good opportunity here. The Bills offense has not been super reliant upon a running back in the passing game, but this could be a changing of the guard.
Yeah, I think this, again, they sort of, it was weird. Devin Singletary originally was sort of the pass catching back, and then towards the end of last year became the bell cow. You've still got Zach Moss in the mix, but the expectation here is that it's going to be Devin Singletary will be the kind of guy you want. And James Cook is more of the pass catching back, more of a James White type role, if you will, as well. You can think about White during his years in New England with Tom Brady, you know, PPR flex type. I think J.D. McKissick, I think, is a good sort of comp for him. We'll see. But I thought this was, given his skill set, given how explosive the Bills' offense is, I thought this was a pretty good landing spot for James Cook.
Yeah, agreed on that. Velus Jones.
And it's not like David. It's not like Devin Singletary is like this locked in. Like, there's no way you can unseat Devin Singletary. James Cook isn't built to be an every down back, but still, I think there's probably more upside for James Cook in Buffalo than there would be in a lot of other places he could have gone to.
Let's get to one more here. That's Velus Jones, wide receiver out of Tennessee. He started his career at USC. Really good in the return game.
Whatever.
Goes to the Bears in the third round. Why, but hold on, though. Whatever what? Tell me why, whatever.
This is a bad offense. And, you know, like, I expect it to be a bad offense. How about that? I expect it to be a bad offense. I don't expect them to be able to support two fantasy-relevant pass catchers. It's going to – my expectation is that you're going to want Darnell Mooney. We all love Darnell Mooney. Mm-hmm. And I think Cole Kmet, in terms of the pass catchers on the Bears. Okay. Like Cole Kmet is like a, you know, late round, like a tight end two type with some upside. I don't see him having significant fantasy value. I'm sorry. Until I see more out of Justin Fields, until I see more out of this offense, this one's a tough one for me. I feel like they're going to be run heavy and it's going to be a lot of Montgomery.
We'll see. So I have a tiny bit of optimism because I do think someone's got to catch passes in Chicago. I just wanted to take a quick moment. And a lot of people in the fantasy community and even people at our own shop and like have basically latched on to the fact that Velus Jones is going to be 25. And that's fine. I hear you. Like you don't want to make a habit of drafting only rookies that are 25 years old or will be 25 by the time their season begins. This is also an outlier year. One of the themes coming into the draft was that it was a much older draft class because of the COVID year. Everybody got an extra year of eligibility. There are a ton of older rookies that were drafted. You got guys like Devontae Wyatt and Cole Strange in the first round. They're like 23, almost 24. Like that's the theme of this year. There are very few players. Like Sauce Gardner was much more the exception than the rule. A guy who's a true junior who came out after that true junior year. So there's some older guys. Like, all right, they're not going to make a habit of drafting 24, 25-year-old kids. And we just talked about Cooper Kupp, who was 24 when he began his season, his career. And, like, whenever I hear that somebody, like, this is a rhetoric that's been used around Kenny Pickett, like, he's already reached his ceiling. He's 24 years old.
You know,
like, I see guys at 28.
I have to say, Phil, also, you know, he's fast. And you could argue what part of the reason that we talk about wide receivers breaking out in year three or four is because it takes time for them to develop their route running as pros and so on. Maybe, just maybe, between his speed, the opportunity in Chicago, and his maturity as a wide receiver, maybe it's going to help him.
And by the way, like, he was really good with the football in his hand. So we'll see. Again, I'm not putting any horsepower. I'm not putting any like major investment into Bayless Jones. I'm more just pushing back on the idea that, like, I feel like there's been some talk that the Bears just lit a draft pick on fire because they took a 24-year-old in the third round. And I'm like, guys, like, let's see, guys.
I'm with you, Field. I guess my negativity isn't about the age or the draft pick. It's just, I want to see some consistency out of Justin Fields. Can this offense, can the Bears offense support two fantasy relevant wide receivers? Because we all know Darnell Mooney is going to get his. And I think Darnell Mooney is actually potentially a really special player. And so,
yeah, agreed.
I don't know. That's what it's about. Like, just, I agree with you. Someone's got to catch patches in Chicago. I just don't know that I'm unenthusiastic about his fantasy prospects and redraft this year until out of the Bears.
He could have 25 catches this year and it wouldn't shock me. It felt like he became like this like poster child of bad draft picks. And I was just surprised. And listen, people that were talking about him, they're friends, they're colleagues, they're people that I respect the heck out of. It felt like there was more rhetoric around Bayless Jones than there were other players. Which sort of caught me by surprise. There are a ton of names. There's like 25 more running backs and 25 more wide receivers that were drafted beyond that. So I'll just, as we get ready to wrap up here, is there anybody else, running back, wide receiver, tight end, you name it, quarterback, you guys thought is worth mentioning right now, it's Malik Willis? Go ahead, Stefania.
Matt Corral to the Panthers.
Okay.
I don't know that I have any confidence in anyone at the Panthers other than Christian McCaffrey. And even there, you know, the confidence, my love for Christian McCaffrey remains the same, but I have more concerns about him because you can't deny what 2 years in a row of injuries have cost. I just want to know what they're going to do at the quarterback position. What do you really think they're going to do at the quarterback position this year?
Yeah. What I think, Stefania, is that they don't even know right now is that like Sam Darnold, by sort of deference, is going to be the starting quarterback going into the year, going into training camp, I should say. Matt Corral will have every opportunity. It will be a legitimate competition. And while they did trade away a 2023 third round pick to move up to get Matt Corral this year, they may say to themselves, it'd be nice. Like, we don't want to just light third round picks on fire. If by pivoting off of him as soon as next year, like at quarterback, it's different. Like at quarterback, it's just different because you have to take more swings. And even if swings don't work out, that they're worth the shot because the quarterback spot that if you hit on it, if Matt Corral is a really good quarterback and is your starting quarterback, then no one will be chiding the Panthers for using a future draft pick to get back into the third round this year. They'll be saying, nice job. So, frankly, I feel like the Panthers had ideas of how they wanted their plans at quarterback to work out. And I think if they had some truth serum in them, I think they'd probably say like it was a series of moves that we wish we could have gone the alternative path down. That's how I sort of feel about Carolina with all these quarterback spots, because could have been Justin Fields, could have been Mac Jones, could have not traded for Sam Darnold. Could have not paid Cam Newton $6 million guaranteed. A lot of coulda, woulda, shoulda. Ultimately, they found themselves in a pickle.
And for fantasy purposes, I feel like their offense is, again, outside of McCaffrey, I don't have very much confidence in their offense for fantasy production.
Yeah. Matthew, any like closing thoughts here? Anybody else you wanted to mention?
Yeah. Real quickly, I want to mention one at each position. And I thought I will say real quickly, I still think DJ Moore will get his, whoever's under center for the Panthers. But at quarterback, I thought Desmond Ridder, in terms of landing spots, Desmond Ridder, who got a lot of pre-draft hype, had a great season at Cincinnati. There were some people that thought Ridder would actually go in the first round. Ridder goes to the Falcons. Again, you sort of think about his skill set, the mobility of Ridder plus the arm, only Marcus Mariota, who's ahead of him on the depth chart. So I think this is a really interesting place, and Ridder like Mariota would be my expectation, takes the first snap of the season for the Atlanta Falcons. But if the things don't go the way the Falcons hope this year, I think you could potentially see Ridder at some point this year. And certainly only a modest, for NFL quarterback standards, a modest two-year investment in Mariota. I do think dynasty-wise, Ridder is pretty interesting given the landing spot there in Atlanta.
Yeah, and I'd be remiss, and before I ask Daniel, I have to turn over to Daniel. I'd be remiss not to mention Malik Willis, only because, you know, certainly as far as athleticism is concerned, already one of the best at quarterback in the NFL. Now, listen, it's clear the NFL saw him differently as a player than draft Twitter did, right? He went the third round. He went 86th overall. The number of quarterbacks that are guaranteed to become a starter from that slot is low. That being said, in Tennessee, they're a year away from having much more financial flexibility in terms of moving off of Ryan Tannehill. And when you have a guy who is at least in the same breadth as maybe a tick below, but same breadth as Kyler Murray and Lamar Jackson athletically, you have to mention him because in fantasy football, we know the value of quarterbacks that can run. So, Daniel, what do you have to wrap things up?
Hang on real quickly before we get to Daniel. One other person that I think we really should mention, I think it's important to mention Malik Willis, but I just want to mention Damian Pierce, the running back who from Florida, who went to the Houston Texans. The only people that are ahead of him in Houston, really, Marlon Mack, who struggled with a bunch of injuries, Rex Burkhead, who'll be 32 years old in July. I thought this was interesting. I retweeted this. Jim Nagy, who of course runs the Super Bowl, he does not run the Super Bowl. Sorry. Yes. He runs the Senior Bowl.
Tom Brady really runs the Super Bowl.
Exactly. Thank you. Exactly. So anyway, apologies, but Jim Nagy, who is somebody that I respect a lot, Field, I know you feel similarly about Jim.
The best.
He is, I think what I just quote tweeted what he said. And I said, when Jim Nagy speaks, I listen. And he talked up Pierce and just said, would not surprise me if Pierce is the starting running back of the Houston Texans this year. And I think that's right. Again, there's not a lot of competition there. There's certainly not a lot of competition there that scares you. And so Pierce, a young guy coming into Houston, and we like what Houston's done. I just think there's opportunity there, and he's certainly not going to have the hype of a Kenneth Walker, of a Breece Hall, but that's a name I think that should be on people's radar. And the last one here that I'll mention is Jalen Tolbert, who I think is pretty interesting as a wide receiver, goes to the Cowboys. Again, you think about the Cowboys with Amari Cooper moving on to Cleveland, Michael Gallup coming off of a serious injury. There's some opportunity there. Cedric Wilson's now in Miami. So I do think Jalen Tolbert has potentially a path to a role on a high-powered offense. So Tolbert, you know, 6'1", 194 out of South Alabama, just an interesting name to also keep on your radar.
Daniel, let's wrap things up. What do you got?
Well, I wasn't listening to everything that Matthew said. Did he mention the move that happened with the Falcons today?
He did not, which is Mike Davis has been released by the Falcons. The starting running back along with Cordarrelle Patterson last year. So, it is no longer the Mike Davis show in Chicago as not
Atlanta.
I'm sorry, in Atlanta, where he was previously in Chicago. But Tyler Allgeier was a fifth round pick out of BYU, is probably in the mix now to at least get some work there in Atlanta.
I wanted to overreact to that because it's like a fifth round running back, right? But they just released Mike Davis afterwards. It's an easy thing to overreact to say, oh, look, this guy's going to be something. But I was curious your guys' thoughts on this because it's kind of that early overreaction theater.
Yeah. So Allgeier, for those unfamiliar, played at BYU, really productive career, was awesome this past year. Not exactly the athletic freak that you'll see from running backs, but solid in the passing game, solid, like, so good power, like durability, all those things were pretty impressive from him during his final season at BYU. Maybe I'm not sure there's a ton of upside there, but another like log on the fire that you have reason to believe Cordarrelle Patterson will be the man again in the Atlanta backfield.
No question about that. And again, this is going to be a bad team. This is going to be a bad team that's going to struggle to score offensive touchdowns. You're going to want Kyle Pitts. You're going to want Cordarrelle Patterson, and then we'll sort of see. I do like Drake London quite a bit in terms of opportunity there for Atlanta, but there's not it's not going to be a hotbed of fantasy goodness, as it were, down south this year, I think.
Sure. Well said right there.
But yes, a name to keep on, you know, every year there are obscure running backs that pop Patterson being a great example from last year, there are guys that you will pick up off the waiver wire that will help you for a month, for a couple of weeks, for the second half of the season. You know, another Tyler Beatty goes to Baltimore. Again, they kicked the tires on Melvin Gordon. They didn't end up doing a deal there. You've got J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards, both coming off of massive ACL injuries, and we expect them to be ready to start the season, but
not necessarily. Got,
yeah. I mean, there you go. So, I mean, like, there's just a name to keep in mind as well, Tyler Beatty, you know, just in terms of somebody's going to run the ball for Baltimore. I mean, you know, whatever. The ghost of Devontae Freeman was actually productive for the Ravens last year at some points, you know. So anyway, just a name.
All right, good stuff here today in the Fantasy Focus. We'll be back later on this week. In the meantime, we all got to get back to some traveling and various assignments for Matthew and Stefania, Daniel, and the entire crew. We had a full boat today. It was awesome to have the entire gang together. I am Field. We're back later this week. Rookies, draft picks in the books. Cannot wait for the NFL season.
Peace out.
If you need a stick of Tide, Field is your guy. If you're in Bristol or in Farmington, you should find another ride. Candidly, he hates Mike Clay, and you know that it's a fact. Every Yater's gonna yate, 'cause he's on TV every day. A spicy tomato who's got the stats and tweets that'll make you laugh. He's our favorite host, and everybody knows his name. He's Field Yates.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.